All right, so I'd like to call this committee of the whole meeting to order on May 1st, 2018, 7 p.m. May I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Davis is not yet here. Mrs. DeGracias?
Here.
Mrs. Hickey?
Here.
Mr. Martieri?
Here.
Mr. Moore is not here. Dr. Thompson?
Here.
Ms. Williams?
Here.
Excellent timing, Dr. Thompson.
Always.
First thing we do is recognize visitors and invite comments from the public. No one to recognize, no one wants to comment. We'll go forward with an approval of the agenda. Motion.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Martieri?
Yep.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Excellent. So, first thing on the agenda is you.
All right.
Dr. Yes. Thompson. And our education committee.
Yes. You want to do what I normally do?
And if I could say, our awesome instructional specialists are here, and Ms. Gaddis, together. You know, they do an awful lot together to keep our district moving forward and focused on teaching and learning, which is why we're here. So it's really great to have them with us. Obviously, Dr. Holloway always has a lot of good information. It's a special night to have you guys. So thank you for taking.
Yeah, I thought cocktails were going to be served, but nothing. So.
All right, well, thank you for the tea up here. So we are here tonight to present the K through 6 Literacy Committee recommendations for reading materials. I have with me tonight, we have Gail Gaddis, who is a fourth grade teacher at Lincoln, Kathleen Fleming, instructional specialist at Willard, Pam Moriarty, instructional specialist at Lincoln, and Jennifer Ankerberg, who's the instructional specialist here at Roosevelt. So I think certainly it's important to acknowledge members of the committee, certainly the instructional specialist, because they did a tremendous amount of heavy lifting when it came to doing this review. We meet weekly, we plan all of the literacy committee meetings, we figure out what materials we need, they do a tremendous amount of research to make sure that the best practices, resources, and all the things that we have are the best that we can find and the most thorough that we can be. So, quite honestly, without them and their support, this review would never have gone as far as it did this year. So, thank them for being here and also for all that they do. And certainly, the teacher leadership of all the teachers on the committee is very key. And those teachers are here before you. This turned out to be quite a popular committee this year, which was good. We really like to have a lot of representation. We have people from kindergarten through eighth grade and across all the different schools, so we felt very comfortable that we had a really even distribution and that the voices of the full staff or representatives of the full staff were present. So with that, our team here is going to get into the details, and I will wrap this up at the end.
Okay. So last time we saw you, we had outlined some of our goals for you, and as you know, they were quite ambitious for a year for literacy. However, we are really excited to share that we have completed several of the goals. Importantly, the overarching student goals, which includes things like communicating, reading text critically, and the other really important goal that we completed was our vision for balanced literacy, and Jennifer will talk a little bit more about that later. But those were two pieces that were really critical for us to complete before we could really move on. Ongoing work still includes best practices. We're always looking at best practices. And so while we did, bless you, while we did quite a bit of work related to best practices, there's always more to be done. We'll also continue the instructional review of certain other materials and look at the work across schools as well as the classroom libraries, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as well later. Before we even started vetting resources, we established goals for vetting resources, and that included aligning all of this work that the committee had done with the best practice research and including it in the practice, and so it was embedded within the review. Then we also looked at aligning everything that we vetted with our balanced literacy vision and the Illinois Learning Standards. And then we also looked at the progression horizontally and also vertically from grade to grade.
Okay. So these are the overarching considerations that we had for the resources. We looked at the social aspect of the learning, and how it related to growth and to achievement. We looked at opportunities for student collaboration, discussion, and we wanted that in the program right away, embedded right in. A connection between the writing, which we already have in place, and the reading, and alignment to our writing instruction. And we also were really looking for authentic opportunities for the reading. And since we have those classroom libraries, we wanted to make the most of them. And most important to that is giving the kids choice and voice. And then the level of intellectual demand, we felt the need to, you know, really raise that a bit. So what we did was we started out just reading about best practice in general. And the whole committee did some work just with the best practice book. And then from there, the committee broke down into various areas of interest all across the board. Phonics, early literacy, vocabulary. And no stone was left unturned. We read everything. And we had a vision that, you know, coincides, of course, with what we had first done for balanced literacy. We considered our goals, and then we used a rubric that we did not develop. That came from the California County Superintendents, and that's how we evaluated all the things that we were looking at.
So then we used that rubric to look at materials. We considered, in considering best practice, we looked for programs that would address all of the different components of balanced literacy, including reading workshop, which includes the teacher doing a very short and focused lesson, and then sending students off to practice that in independent reading, and then working in small groups. So we were looking for things that would meet all of these needs, knowing that one program might not meet all of the needs, but also kind of considering what might work well with being flexible, and that we might be able to add other components that would be compatible. So we looked at the most recent Journeys reading program. We looked at Fontes and Pinnell, and we looked at units of study for reading, which correlates with the units of study for writing. And we had several teachers actually using the units of study for reading this year, just kind of trying to get an idea of what it was like. So we looked at those components, and then using the rubric, we came up with strengths and weaknesses for each one. And Jennifer's going to take us.
Yes.
Okay, so as Gail mentioned, during the vetting process, members of our committee were organized into grade level bands. And we looked at all of these resources to see how well they've matched up with our vision statement and also the components of balanced literacy that we also have compiled into a statement. Our small groups worked independently, and then we compared notes after a while, and we found that we came together on some strengths and weaknesses. For example, many of our groups saw that Journey's strengths were in the fact that it's a comprehensive kit of materials that all work together very nicely. We also felt that Journeys had a very clear-to-follow scope and sequence that was easy for our teachers to navigate. On the other hand, Fontes and Pinnell was also a comprehensive kit, which was helpful and convenient. And it also had some better text selections that were a little bit more authentic. The committee, though, felt that the units of study for reading had the most powerful combination of strengths in that there was a combination of connections between reading and writing and speaking and listening, as well as opportunities for inquiry and collaboration among students, and as well as opportunities for teachers to teach those explicit mini lessons that Gail was talking about just a minute ago. And our grade level bands were also in agreement about the weaknesses of these three resources. We felt that Journeys really overall did not really uphold the principles of the balanced literacy statement that we had set out with. Fontes and Pinnell was more teacher-centered, but we felt that it lacked opportunities for student inquiry and collaboration. And then again, units of study for reading. We felt that these kind of were, you know, they're a little bit wordy in their presentation, but we felt that they would require some good study by our teachers. And there was going to be a need here for our staff to add some of the component work. We would need to add in some phonics and some guided reading and things like that to really flesh out the whole balanced literacy picture.
Jennifer, would you speak very quickly
sure.
to the issue of how sessions being written in narrative form is a limitation for our teacher?
Sure, absolutely. Each lesson is presented, I would say, maybe 5 to 7 pages of a very detailed narrative where the authors of the program have given examples of what a teacher might say during that mini mm-hmm. lesson. And that might not be the way exactly that a teacher might deliver it, but the authors felt it was important to show how that might go. And teachers certainly have the opportunity to make it their own, but it is a lot of narrative text that teachers kind of need to wade through to find the, you know, the goals of the lesson, how to tee up the lesson, where we're going to make connections for students and things like that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So bigger concern initially
right.
until we become more familiar.
Until we internalize it and make it our own.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. So, I'm very happy. You can see my bias to push this button. based on our review of the resources, we are recommending that District 90 adopt the units of study for teaching reading for grades K-6. And we're not recommending 7 and 8 because they don't exist yet. So this was our focus. And we also want you to understand that kindergarten, the way the program is written, is for an all-day kindergarten. And so kindergarten's going to look just like kindergarten looks different from first grade and other grades. Kindergarten will look different because it's a half-day program. And we have already been working with staff developers from the Teachers College just for writing, so we can continue that work and bring in the reading aspect. And phonics, word studies, spelling, and grammar will not be changing for next year because we didn't have the time to really vet things as carefully as we would like. And so that's coming. It's a coming attraction.
So the other recommendation that we have is for phonological awareness, and so it's a phonemic awareness program. The reason it doesn't have as much as the reading workshop recommendation is because teachers have already been using this resource. We looked at multiple resources that were available for phonological awareness, and the one that the teachers are currently using fit the bill. And so there, it was a much more clear-cut decision. So we have completed quite a bit similar to our goals. We, in terms of reading workshop, we've made the recommendation for the units of study, and so that review is complete. The guided reading piece, units of study for reading doesn't explicitly include lesson plans for guided reading. And so we needed something that we would be able to use to do this. And one thing that we're already using in district is called the Fountas and Pinnell Benchmark Assessment System, which includes kids reading short readers, and then the teacher will do a running record, listening to how they read, and then having a conversation with them about their understanding of the story. And so we thought this was a really good match for reading workshop, because philosophically it's a good match. From the research standpoint, it's a good match. And then also from resources that we have, a very good match. All teachers right now, K-6, have this K-8 literacy continuum book. It's a very large book of strategies and skills that kids use when they're reading. And it goes from level A, which would be typically, you know, kindergarten, all the way through Z. And so that continuum looks at how kids progress over time. There's also a guided reading book that is quite large, but also from Fountas and Pinnell, that really details how one might construct a guided reading lesson. And so together, that's our recommendation for the guided reading. One resource we already have, and the other is a professional book that would be a compendium for that. Something that, as you know, is ongoing is the classroom libraries, and Jennifer will still talk about that in a little bit. The phonemic awareness, the skills they need to help them succeed. That was what I was referring to earlier. It's by an author, Hegarty, who is from River Forest. Then our phonics and word study and grammar will begin next year. We got to a point in our committee work related to this timeline where we recognized that what we had already recommended in terms of the reading workshop, the guided reading, and the phonological awareness was quite a bit. And we thought that we, first of all, need to make sure that when we're reviewing phonics, word study, and grammar, that we're giving it our time and energy. And also as a way to scaffold it for teachers in terms of recommendation and implementation. Because if we would have gone to implement, if we would have come to you with a recommendation for all of these, with possibly a plan for teachers to implement all of these, we thought that that wasn't a reasonable implementation timeline. And so that's where we split it in terms of the core being reading workshop, which embedded within that is guided reading and independent reading. And so that way we would have that core for next year. And it dovetails so well with units of study for writing. And as Gail said, the lesson structure is parallel. And so all of this professional development that's been occurring in writing can be will be in really enhanced next year as they apply it in reading. But it's parallel, and it dovetails so well. And so we're really excited for next year.
How does it articulate with what's already going on in 7th and 8th grade since it's different from what they have?
Well, that's part of the review for the fall. So one of the issues with the reading series is that they've only produced materials up through 6th grade and the rest is in process. So one of the things that we're doing to help tee up for next year is the 7th grade is going to go to the Summer Writing Institute at Teachers College. So they're going to get immersed in reading and writing training while they're there. And we have to start doing tight vertical articulation so they can look back and see as the students come up through the grades with the units of study that they're ready to receive them in a way that makes sense for the students. So that's a big piece we're going to look at, that their resources in the fall.
Okay, as Kathleen said, we are excited about a lot of things happening in literacy in our district. One thing are the new classroom libraries that are coming to some of our classrooms. It is a huge job, but it is so exciting to put these materials in the hands of students. I myself personally have had my hands on probably about 2,500 new books for our students here at Roosevelt. And, you know, this allows students to have their, you know, reading levels challenged and to be able to read much more widely and much more diversely than they've done in perhaps the past. As we do this work, we have some interesting little challenges in terms of space. Where are we going to put and store these books? How are we going to make them accessible to students? But it's something that we have dug into, and we continue to seek ways to handle those challenges. As we do this work, we are looking at best practices in terms of leveling books. We are looking at what's the best way to present level books to students and to staff, and how should we communicate those levels. We're also looking at the best practices in terms of providing diverse and culturally responsive materials for our students so that all of our students can see themselves in the works of literature that they find in their classrooms. And we're also very excited about the fact that these resources that are going to be provided and already are being provided do support so well the units of study for both reading and writing.
A couple additional things worth mentioning, I think. We did add an additional staff developer that will work specifically with grades 6, 7, and 8 next year. So before we had somebody that was with grades K-1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and we've been asking the upper grades to opt in to come and join the trainings that we do, but next year we got one specifically for them. So when we look for a through line as materials come out and we continue to adopt, we have a consistent line approach in terms of process reading and process writing. The Fontes and Pinnell kit, actually, the units of study for reading are unique in that they offer an equity strand to it that you don't see in other materials. So by that I mean when you're in a classroom that has leveled libraries and you're doing mini lessons, the program does it in such a way that you can teach strategies to kids that are in different books. So all kids do not need to read the same book at the same time. They can be in different book groups. They can read their own individual books at their levels. But when it's strategy, they do the mini lesson. Kids practice in their own books that are aligned for them. So that way you don't end up tracking within a class, or you don't end up tracking kids out into different spaces. You can keep all readers together in one classroom, unless they are significantly below where the strategy work they're doing doesn't match the kind of the books that they're reading. So if they're reading a couple grade levels below or significantly below, that's when we have to start looking at alternative curriculum or supports. But in general, you can have kids reading within grade level bands in the same classroom, doing the same work, having conversations together. That is a unique aspect of that program. You can also pull small groups of kids that are reading different books and at different levels to do strategy work that way. So that's a feature that was certainly really attractive in looking at these materials. Fontes and Pinnell, Teachers College also designs a lot of their materials with Fontes and Pinnell leveling in mind, so they go very well together. The Fontes and Pinnell kit was very comprehensive, and the teachers did like aspects of it, except it wasn't really flexible. So if teachers wanted to choose maybe different books to do for different read-alouds or different components, they couldn't do that, and it was pretty well scripted. That sort of undermines teacher flexibility. So, however, the units of study for reading does refer to Fontes and Pinnell a lot, and they are very upfront with their materials in saying, this program does not address phonics, this program does not address grammar, but it's set up in such a way that when you find the other resources, you can tuck it into the instruction easily. So those are my additional plans that I'm making this.
Will this be available in the summer school curriculum? It says summer work to support.
So the summer work is for the grade level teams to get a head start. So if the third grade team decided they wanted to start going through the materials this summer and planning proactively for the fall, there's money available for that. We are starting to align our summer school materials with curriculum in the schools. So for example, writing workshop, there's a series called Up the Ladder. And it is aligned to the writer's workshop. It's designed for kids that need a boost. So that is going to be put into summer school curriculum. And we're looking at using math programs that are aligned to the math philosophy that we have. So we're getting there. And then we have the classroom libraries that we have to use with the kids too. So we do want to make sure, especially for interventions for kids that need summer support, we want to make sure that there is a clear trajectory for them. We did a lot of work this year, which means we had a lot of next steps. So Monday is our meeting, and the first question we have, this was presented to staff last week, and was received well. At least that was the feedback that we all got. But the next piece is how do we implement this? So the elementary teachers in particular have their year one with math. Year two with math is going to be it's quite a heavy lift as year one, but there's still a lot of work to do there, and they're now on year three or year four writing. So we want to make sure we don't overwhelm them. So the committee is going to put together a phase-in plan for how we will phase out journeys and phase in readers workshop. Certainly that's where the instructional specialists come in, because they help partner with teachers in order to look at pedagogy and make adjustments in their classrooms. Summer work will be available, so we have our grade level meetings the next couple of weeks. The instructional specialists will work with the teams to figure out what are their summer goals, what kind of work do they need to do, and how we can support that. As they mentioned earlier in the presentation, our staff developers that are already here and have relationships with our teachers will continue to work with us, but they will now add reading into the professional development as well as the writing. And we are continuing to expand the libraries. We're going to get classroom libraries for grade 6 this summer, continue to expand what we have K through 5. And then finally, 7th and 8th grade, we'll start looking at their materials, and Teachers College is going to have more stuff come out, I think, sometime in the fall. We've got things in development, so
I'd like to certainly acknowledge and thank not just you all here, but the teachers who did the work with the classroom libraries, verifying the appropriateness of the materials. Obviously, that's an area that we really wanted to make sure we were providing teachers with resources that kids are going to find. But feeling, but I know it was easy. It's one of those things that's very easy to say and harder to do.
Yeah.
Would you be comfortable maybe just saying a few words, Allison, about how this will dovetail well with our movement towards universal design? You know, the idea that obviously we're trying to give students voice and choice and, you know, high engagement. Why would these materials be complementary to that?
Philosophically, they really believe that kids write strong and they write well about topics that they know a lot about, or topics that connect to their interests and their passions, and this program is really designed to do that. And certainly chime in anytime you want to, because you are much more familiar with these materials than I am. That's a piece of it, and when you have a open library where kids are given access to books that are interesting to them in addition to their level, that they read stronger, they read longer, they do all those things. So it's not about everybody's getting this one lesson at this one time, and everybody's using this particular material in this one time.
Right.
And when it comes to, for units of study for reading, a lot of it is kids do a lot of writing about what they read, but it's open in such a way that they make meaning and how they connect with the reading that they do that they then express through their writing, and it comes in a whole range of expressions. So they're taught strategies, but how they express what they know based on their reading is very different. It's based on the individual child.
What many of us in the room came up at a time, obviously, and some of our kids pretty recently, where you know they were exposed more to the Basil Reader, or we'll all remember the class all read Flowers for Algernon at the same time. Regardless of whether or not that content was of interest, or above or below the reader's ability level, it actually probably made it harder for teachers to personalize instruction because they're kind of forced to work with this set of materials, whereas now hopefully there's going to be better ability for teachers to adapt to variability.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when kids are not given the choice in terms of what they read, they have to read what they're given, we know that they don't read. I mean, they may slog through something, but if they're not connecting to the materials that they're given, that's problematic because they turn off, they'll fake it, they won't read it, they'll, you know, slog through however they do it, and that doesn't get to the goal that we have, where we want kids to be lifelong readers. We want them to love reading. So, you know, as much as we appreciate the high test scores we have, that's great. We also want to make sure that we keep an eye on, we want them to read for the rest of their lives, for pleasure, for information, for all those things, and we want them to feel comfortable doing that. That's a big overarching goal.
Yeah, and Allison, since the UDL is a major pedagogical shift, right, and it's an important one philosophically, I think it's important to always talk about how whatever curriculum we're being asked to approve the adoption of falls in line or helps or is complementary to Dovetail. I'm just going to flag, so that's one of the things Ed and I were sidebarring on. The other thing is, I appreciate the fact you couldn't do all this stuff on phonics and grammar or whatever. It sounded like a heavy lift to me as you were going through it. But I'm going to flag a concern. In the past, and this is pre-Allison, and in math in particular, we had a bunch of independent contractors going their own way. And we had very poor articulation and very poor coordination, so hence very different experiences for the kids. I want to make sure that whatever we do in supplementing this as a curriculum development, that it's done as a team, that it's fully articulated, and it's something that's an experience where a kid's going to be having, right, reinforced over time. So I'm just flagging that as a concern because
I
lived through a period when that was a problem.
Well, and that's why we're here, right? We want to make sure that that's not an issue. We simply just ran out of time this year, but right now everybody's using whatever they're using. There are not that many different resources they're using, but they're not all using one.
Right.
And the goal is to pick the best one, right?
Right.
And one of the reasons why we tabled phonics is Teachers College is coming out with a new program, supposed to come out in the spring, and the phonics panel looks good. But if we already have writing workshop, reading workshop, and Teachers College has come out with a phonics program, we don't want to prematurely go with the phonics panel if the phonics for TC could be seamless, so we'll look at that. So the goal is, yes, we want to make sure we have very clear on where we're tight and where we're loose. What are we all doing, and where's the wiggle room for people? So that's key.
Did I understand you to say, Allison, that you only piloted one? You only piloted the one that you chose, as opposed to when the math team was looking at various materials. They piloted several in different classrooms.
So we did something a little bit different with this for a couple reasons. When you look in the math world, there are a gazillion math programs that you could choose from. You really have to thoroughly go through them. When you're looking at literacy, there are really three things on the market. It's the gazillion Basel readers that exist, and there are a lot of those reading programs. There's Teachers College, and Fontes and Middle just came out, but only for kindergarten through second grade. So when we really got down to what's going to be the most suitable, the Basel reader, we already use it, and it didn't pass muster with the best practices, so there was no point in piloting it, so that went out the window. Fontes and Pinnell offered a lot, but again, it only went through K-2, but what we liked about it is that you can break it apart into pieces. So journeys is journeys. You either take the whole thing or you take none of it, but Fontes and Pinnell, you can break the components apart. So we didn't want the guided reading, but we really like the phonics, so we'll look at the phonics later, and then we'll look at the word study that they have. But we did look at Fontes and Middell and say, one, it doesn't cover enough grade levels, and we don't want to take the whole package because we don't want the whole package. But pieces of the package will fit in. So when you look at all that, there's really...
You didn't need to pilot it to know that.
There's nothing, we didn't need to pilot to know that. And we really, once Journeys was off the table, we didn't look at Fontes and Pinnell as it's going to be either Fontes and Pinnell or Teachers College. It could be yes and, but what are those components that fit together the best that we can provide the strongest program for our students? So,
I'm glad to hear that you will be looking at grammar.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, it's a hot button for everybody, right? I mean, everybody has a thought about grammar. And
they weren't teaching it when I went through school, and then I tried to learn a foreign language and found that
that was not difficult. Well, it's interesting.
Without any grammar support.
Yeah, and I will say that the people have very strong opinions about grammar, but thankfully there are 77, I'm not kidding when I say, 70 years worth of research on grammar instruction and how students learn to use it and how they generalize it. So we certainly have plenty of information to guide us. I think what we really want to be able to do is join the committee.
I'm thinking about it. Yes.
You really want to do a K-8 continuum. The grammar standards already exist. Some of them are a little ambitious for kindergarten students and first grade students, and I would say the people out in the field would say that the K-2 grammar language standards are mean. Not very nice for kids, so we need to look at, I think you would all echo and say that they're not appropriate. However, when you look at it as opposed to they do this in kindergarten first or second, it's by the end of second grade, you want to make sure that they have these things. So we want to make sure that we're developmentally appropriate, because we're not here to stress kids out, we're here to help them love learning and to engage in learning and to grow to the greatest degree that they can. So.
And some of it is already embedded in the writing program. So while it's not specifically a grammar lesson, a teacher might pull a small group to work on whatever. It might be punctuation, it might be nouns and pronouns. So that work is going on, but it's not, you can't walk into somebody's classroom and see a grammar book. But you will see the results of it in their writing.
Which makes my head explode.
I know it does. We'll have an interesting presentation.
It's not
for
the
you
fun
when
part,
when
that's
ready.
For sure.
Well, but, yeah. what I came to hear is, on this board over the years, is the way grammar is taught is happenstance. They catch things kids do improperly from a grammatical standpoint and fix it, which means you're all Donald Rumsfeld. You don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And the kids don't know what they don't know. They've never had a comprehensive grammar lesson. Soup to nuts, here's what you have to learn.
Right.
And I had none. So I can still diagram a sentence.
But I
feel like it's a real lost art. I teach at the graduate level at a university, and the best students cannot write. I taught at Northwestern Law School. The best students cannot write. So I think this lack of a fundamental understanding of grammar is really a problem as they go on in their careers. I'm going on record. I'm a little bit of a fuss budget.
It's not a fun thing to make time for.
Well, it could be if you do it a certain way. I mean, I think the goal with grammar is we want kids to use grammar for power and purpose, right? We want to be proactive in our teaching, but we want them to make intentional decisions about how they punctuate the writing that they do. We want them to be intentional about how they structure the writing that they do, and grammar is a piece of that. I mean, it is a major part of communicating, but there's some traditional thoughts about that. There are more progressive thoughts about that. I happen to think progressive versus traditional traditional is a false narrative. It's best practices at this point. The research says what the research says. But I think there's a lot of truth to what Ralph says in terms of we need to be intentional and forward-thinking and help kids make good choices. The more they read and write, the better they actually get. So that's a piece of it, too. Volume matters. Volume with writing, volume with reading. Kids internalize that stuff. You have to explicitly teach them, but it does. It makes a huge difference.
Well, it sounds like a real plus that both the reading and the writing are the Lucy Calkins programs that really fit together well so that we get the same vocabulary and the same goals.
Common language. Kids don't have to relearn the terms the teachers use year after year. It just flows through, so that's really helpful.
And the workshop approach is the same in the reading and the writing.
Yeah.
You know, the two are structured the same so that they'll be, you know, they're familiar already with mini lessons and small groups. So the process will be familiar to the kids.
Cadence in the class.
And to teachers, so it won't be as heavy a lift for them than if they've never done this before. So it's helpful.
Well, I would just say as a matter of compliment, you know, one of the things I think about this process, which also was similar to the process that was utilized with the math adoption, and my hat's off to you, is that you obviously started with the end in mind, right, by having your committee identify what the key deliverables were, you know, what is the district's philosophy around this, and then that too probably also helps in getting to the end conclusion that you knew was aligned with where we were trying to go. And it helped to narrow substantially the alternatives, because there's certainly a lot out there. There are still many publishers who are willing to sell you, you know, or sell us hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of materials.
They call me every day. But certainly the expertise of the professionals were, you know, everybody in a room.
Yes, shared expertise.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, excellent presentation. Thank you. Thanks for the hard work. Appreciate it. So that brings in Anthony.
So as he's headed forward, so as Anthony's coming forward, for those in attendance here tonight, you may or may not be aware of the way in which the state will now be requiring, based upon some federal legislation, that we attribute costs to specific school sites. And the purpose of this is to accomplish a number of different objectives. Some have to do with equity, some have to do with transparency. But it's one of those things that's easier said than done. And we're grateful certainly having Anthony's leadership at this. And he's going to spend a few minutes talking about the hows and the whys and what it means for district 90.
Sure.
So thanks.
And it'll be even shorter now because you practically said three slides.
Thunder, Steve.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the new site-based financial reporting requirement. For ESSA, or the Every Student Succeeds Act. In March of 17, ISB adopted a state plan for Illinois based on the federal plan that Obama signed into law in 2015. So late last fall, there was an advisory committee that was appointed of about 30 professionals made up of superintendents, business officials, IASA, IASBO representatives, as well as independent CPAs to come up to vet out the ideas to put this in place and to give a guidance document, which they did bring forth in January of 2018. And what they came forth with is the reason for this expenditure reporting is that ESSA requires that school districts report on their report card per pupil expenditures of federal, state, and local funds, including actual expenditures of personnel-related expenditures, non-personnel-related expenditures, disaggregated by the source of funds, and for every school district in the state, and they put together a reporting structure for that. So why? As Dr. Kahn talked about, there's three reasons, real reasons why. One, it's to empower the districts and their communities to assess and improve equity. Thinking about this from a standpoint of how the expenditures are reported or the costs that are associated, doing it by site or building, in this case, Lincoln, Roosevelt, and Willard, seeing how the costs are allocated to those buildings and then saying, wow, telling your story, thinking district-wide, why is one building different from the other? And there will be reasons when you talk about reporting. Also, giving you a better understanding of being the community members of the relationship between student outcomes and costs and financial resources. So on a report card, it shows the student outcomes or the test scores. Now it's going to start showing some financial related information on that report card and having a relationship between those. And that's what the report card is going to expand to show. And lastly, just like the per pupil expenditure amount and the tuition charge that's shown on the annual financial report, this will give the districts, when thinking about districts, other districts in the state, kind of a consistent way of seeing how costs are allocated by sites and saying, wow, we're a similar district to that district. Why are their costs so much different than ours? So those are the whys. Now the whens.
Anthony, I'm going to throw in one more why.
Sure.
This came out of the federal work I did when I served on the Commission on Excellence and Equity. It was a recommendation we made. A lot of times what we found were within districts inequities were worse than statewide inequities, and especially large urban districts as CPS, Philadelphia, LA, New York. So we really had to get the information into decision makers' hands at the state and local level about these inequities. And we really had to have a way to address it. And there was no way to address it because all financial reporting was done at the district level. So you will see truly is an equity lens. To move down to the site-based level for reporting is a crucial change in approach, and it allows the kind of transparency on resource allocation that lets you understand, hey, why are these schools in the poorest area of the city of Chicago receiving less investment than, say, you know, this magnet school? So it allows that kind of inquiry. It's actually a good improvement. The problem is for people like Anthony, it's a major addition to their workload.
So that major addition, when are we going to do this? Well, for the site-based reporting, we need to start accounting for that July 1 of 2018, or school year, or fiscal year 19. And then this first report will be sometime in the fall of 2019, so after the fact, just like we do all of our other reporting on our annual financial report, our audit. This will be after the fact, a one document report, and I'll show you what the guidance is saying it may look like, in the fall of 19 based on fiscal year 2019, and of course, every year thereafter. So getting back to that guidance document, so ISBE's, and with their help of their advisory committee, has made a document available providing some instructions about this reporting requirement. So for District 90, some of the highlights are all expenditures for students pre-K to 8. Actually, it's the law is ages 3 to 21, PK to 12, but we're only a K district, so it's only for us. Including those in out-of-district placed schools, private facilities. So we have to think about including those in their home building, the costs associated with those students, and then knowing that part-time students will be at half-time or 0.5. And this all goes into the calculation of site-based costs. And then getting to a per-pupil expenditure or a site-level expenditure, which are earmarked for that site, plus that site's share of district-wide or centralized expenditures divided by the number of school site students. And then the district has the ability to choose their methodology for their centralized expenditures. And it doesn't have to be just one methodology for all centralized expenditures. They get to choose individual methodologies for different types of expenditures. For example, if you have a centralized personnel cost like the superintendent, how are we going to allocate his salary across buildings would be different than how we would allocate electricity that's in the operations and maintenance fund. This might be based on square footage of the buildings. His might be just 33 1/3% by each school because he doesn't spend more time at one building than he does in another. So just to give you a visual, and this is the source of this is from ISBE, giving you an idea that you have your site level expenditures or Area A, your site share of districtwide centralized expenditure, district centralized expenditures in Area B, divided by the number of school sites, students for C. So this is the first thing that ISB sent out, showing what the reporting framework might look like. So you have an example here of all the sites on the left. This individual one has five different sites. Enrollment is reported at each individual site, and then it breaks down the site level per pupil expenditures, disaggregating them by the source. So if we have certain grant funds specifically tied to a site, then that would be a expenditure related to a federal source, then combining state and local into the next source, and then coming up with a total. So you see the area for enrollment is C. These site level per pupil expenditures are A divided by C, and now you get into your district centralized per pupil expenditures, once again disaggregated by source, us having the chance to have the methodology to allocate them, reported the same way, a total per pupil expenditure, noting that there are some items excluded. There are certain functions, community-wide services is one function in the education fund that's excluded. All your bond and interest or debt is excluded. Your capital outlay that's in every fund except the education fund is also another exclusion. So these are things that are specifically shown as being excluded, coming to a total expenditure, and then what you don't see on here is breaking that down by site total costs. This level of reporting detail, as ISB is noted, it will be the only year that they will mandate that collection in year one, along with the notation of their allocation methodologies. After that, it will be a fluid document that will evolve over time, and right now they're not absolutely certain exactly how much level of detail they're going to require.
Yeah, I'm on their advisory team, and I'm trying to push them to require more. So if you hate what comes out because it's too detailed, I'm currently the minority voice. The business management officials in the room that are also part of the advisory team want it to be more loosey-goosey.
So what is District 90 doing now? So in order to begin accounting for these expenditures on July 1 of 18, I am expanding our general ledger, the entire chart of accounts to allocate all expenditures to sites. So if you can imagine that our general ledger is this big, I've had to multiply that by four, adding three additional sites plus the ones that are already there. And then thinking of an appropriate allocation method for centralized expenditures so that we can decide whether or not, in addition to how we're going to allocate, but how we're actually going to account for it. Just giving an example, payroll or personnel expenditures, I'm building into the personnel a portion of the software so that as payrolls are being processed, and as you see in the next bullet point, assigning each personnel to a location code or multiple location codes, that throughout the year as payroll is done, it is automatically allocating it based on the methodology. I also had to establish individual or multiple account numbers for non-personnel related expenditures. But then when it comes to centralized office or the administration building, are we really going to say, if I'm going to buy this flash drive for $2.99, am I going to split that three ways at the time we spend or pay the bill? Or are we just going to total all of that at the end of the year and then do an allocation? The loosey-goosey part that Ralph is talking about is that ISB is not saying you have to do any of this in your financials. You could just keep a off-balance sheet or off-income statement Excel spreadsheet and handle it then. There are almost 875 school districts in the state of Illinois. I can't imagine that everyone from here downstate are going to be, modifying their general ledger and their chart of accounts to include this, in other words, automating it, rather than just saying, I'm just going to keep track, and at the end of the year when I do that reporting framework, I'm going to add it all up, and then I'll hit the button and submit it to ISB. And then the last thing is to ensure that items are excluded from reporting are easily identifiable, so you're not going through items at the end of the year when it's getting time to report, that you can't locate them quickly and it's difficult to calculate. Any questions at all? Just so you know, at this, before I get to the questions, right now our chart of accounts has been expanded to the size it needs to be. I added 91 additional personnel location codes to be able to accept all of the individual employees in the payroll system, and it's ready to go live July 1. The problem is will it work on July 1? So it's ready to go, and we'll see what happens. The good thing is that it's a limited amount of expenditures in the summer because you guys are all coming. Questions?
I should point out we are minimally compliant with ESSA in Illinois. This is minimal compliance.
I'm just wondering, what's the penalty? What's the penalty for this first year if it's not done?
Well, I don't think they haven't said anything about those types of penalties. Just like not submitting your budget on time or not submitting your AFR on time, the one thing they've withheld is state payments. Now with the new funding formula, I don't know if that's what they would, the first thing they would think to do. I think they're gonna be, well, I shouldn't say, I would think they would be hounding people, but in the first year, maybe they'll be lenient.
I don't think they're gonna hound in the first year. Yeah. Plus they have limited capacity to do that.
Right.
Their personnel capacity is pretty good.
But part of the intention of this is that the information is publicly available. Mm-hmm. And so there's some, you know, community pressure that could be brought to bear if a school district is not conforming to the expectations.
Yeah. Right.
And that's more of an issue in other communities. The other thing that we're trying to do is marry the ESSA requisites on reporting with the new evidence-based model of school funding, which has all these evidence-based practices. What we're trying to do is come up with a comprehensive and integrated reporting document that allows every stakeholder in a community to see whether or not their school board is electing to utilize resources in accordance with what the evidence suggests works.
And Ralph, would it be naive to say or elementary to say that the evidence-based funding model created a better equitable system across districts, and this creates a better equitable system across the buildings in the school sites within the district?
Yeah, it's really, and it was really, I mean, so if you think about these large urban districts, another inequity that was a resource inequity we found consistently was the poorest schools had the youngest teaching staffs with the highest turnover. So, you know, obviously, and then lowest cost. And that's a prescription for failure if there aren't teacher mentors in the building that really know what they're doing that can work with the younger. I mean, you have brilliant young teachers, but still experience matters. And so this resource allocation accounting is a really good thing down to the site level. It's going to allow for a lot more detailed educational analysis going forward. They're already busting my chops at ISBE because I want so much data at the school level for purposes of doing analysis on educational trends and what's really happening with student performance. So
it seems like very valuable information to have.
Yeah.
Worth going out of your way to get it set up.
But it's a lot of work. I mean, and you should minimize that. The hoops Anthony has to jump through just to make us minimally compliant with the federal ESSA are significant. So it does have to be phased in, but I think it should be phased in and mandatory.
At the board level, you see a monthly treasurer's report. That's about to get four times larger than it was before.
Do you expect to use this for budgeting as well?
Yeah, I would believe that ISBE would not require you to budget at this level. They're just, I haven't heard anything about changing the budget form. However, if you think about it this way, if you don't budget for it at this level, you don't have the same monitoring capabilities. Your working budget, your lower documents have only minimal budget lines that have an actual budget figure, that because you're only budgeting at the level that's required by the state. But then how do you tell a department at a certain site that they're going over budget or you need to monitor them more closely? You don't even have any idea what they've been allocated, or they don't have any idea what they've been allocated. I thought that by adding all of these individual lines would essentially budget at that level as well. It may not be reported to the board at that level, but for monitoring capabilities and education for the departments as they go through the year, it's better to do it that way.
It allows for more fine-tuning.
A lot more transparency.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ed, you're up.
So at this point, really the only superintendent's report item would be to ask the board to please consider a motion to approve the use of the, or approve the recommendation of the literacy committee for the use of the new literacy materials.
Can you get a motion?
So moved. Second.
Who moved the motion?
That was Nicole.
Moved. Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassis?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yeah.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Whitney?
Yes.
All right, so now we are about to go into closed session according to Illinois law for the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body or legal counsel for the public body, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee of the public body or against legal counsel for the public body to determine its validity. I will note that we will not be taking any actions after we come out of closed session, so if you want to hang out just to hear us adjourn, find better things to do with your lives. So, can I get a motion to go into closed session?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye.